Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Fixed Income Conversation Corner podcast series on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today's conversation, we are joined once again by Head of Taxable Fixed Income Strategy for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Leslie Falconio. Also excited to have with us once again, rejoining the series, Head of Fixed Income from AllianceBernstein, Scott DiMaggio. With that, Leslie, Scott, thank you both for dropping by, spending some time today with our listeners, our clients. Leslie, I'll pass it over to you to lead today's conversation with Scott. Welcome back.
Great, Dan. Thank you so much. And, you know, Scott and I, we've done these podcasts several times before. You know, he's such a great partner, and I respect his opinion, you know, immensely. So thank you so much, Scott, for coming on. We picked a good time, I think, you know, as we head into the end of the year. So I definitely appreciate your time, and you know, we look forward to hearing your views.
Yeah, Lily, thanks for the invite and the kind words. Always enjoy our conversation, so looking forward to it.
Great. So why don't we get into sort of, I just want to start off, listen, we're just a little bit past the halfway mark, and time is moving faster than one would anticipate. It's been, you know, a very tumultuous year, but it's gone by pretty quickly. But I do want to just start with, if we think about sort of what we've done the past, you know, let's just say 8 months, and what you think about what the drivers were since the beginning of the year, how would you sort of, you know, describe it in a nutshell about what we've heard, not just in terms of interest rates, but just in fixed income in general?
Well, let me look at it. Let me attack it two ways, right? The first, let's think about where we were in January. In January, we were both having conversations with our clients. We were talking about the uncertainty around tariffs. We didn't know which way that could, you know, that could go. It culminated in, as we all know, on Liberation Day. And we were talking about fiscal uncertainty and what would the big, beautiful bill, as it's since been named, you know, come to mean. And I think that led a lot of investors in the first half of the year, the first quarter of the year, to really sit on their hands and to worry about these two areas. What we've seen since is we've seen a lot, like the range of outcomes really narrow. So we have a lot more clarity on tariffs. We can talk about China and some specifics, but nonetheless, we'll be somewhere around 18%. And then we have some clarification out of the fiscal situation, right? We have a deficit number now. We have a roadmap of borrowing as well as spending plans. So that narrows that range of outcomes and gives investors a little bit more certainty. I think what's happened as a result of that is people have become more comfortable with the bond market and what people have, you know, started to, you know, buy credit. The credit metrics remain really strong. They've bought into some of this duration rally, as you and I were joking about, probably not enough, right, based on where we were. And I think investors are getting a little bit more comfortable with the risk environment with that backdrop. Now, the other part of that is, as we look at the data the past maybe 4 or 5 weeks, and we can talk about all the rumors and such, you know, but the data is showing the U.S. economy is slowing, right? It's growing about half the rate that it was a year ago. And that slowing trend is going to give the central bank, the Fed, a lot more confidence to reduce interest rates as we get into the second half of the year.
So when we think about that, and let's kind of go to, let's shift to the Fed for a moment. I mean, we know that, you know, people could discuss, you know, constantly, is it the destination or is it the journey? I mean, when you think about just the destination, the market has, you know, pretty much had combined cuts from 25 and 26. Let's just say it's kind of, you know, gone between, you know, 100 basis points, 150 basis points of Fed cuts, right? And then, you know, we know that the market keeps going back and forth about the September. But now, after the non-tarm we saw and the revisions we saw, and you and I will talk about that, you know, a bit later, they have the September cut in there, you know, priced, you know, with a fairly healthy, say, 93% probability. But there's talk about, you know, possibly going 50. And I know I can tell you from UBS CIO point of view, we are expecting, and we had been 3 months ago too, 4 months ago, a September cut. And from September, we're expecting consecutive cuts until we total about 100 basis points of cuts ending in the first quarter of 26. And that's been our view for quite some time. So how do you think, given the mark, what the market is pricing in now, which is almost like a, you know, 65 basis point split between 25 and 26, how are you sort of, you know, preparing for We know we have Jackson Hole, but how are you preparing for that September Fed meeting? What are your thoughts in terms of what the outcome might be?
Yeah, well, Lizzie, I think what you said, I think that the trend or the destination is probably more important than any one event. And, you know, similar to UBS, beginning of the year, we thought we would have three cuts this year. We actually thought it would be July, we thought it would be September, and we thought it would be, you know, November, December kind of split. So we're kind of off a little bit on that. But, you know, the market is coming around to that view there will be, you know, three interest rate reductions. I don't, you know, whether it's 25 or 50 and however they stagger it, I'm not sure it matters that much, right? The goal or what the Fed told us last year is the neutral rate is somewhere around 3 to 3.25, right? We can have a debate about exactly what that means. I think the takeaway is that it's lower than it is, that number is lower than where the rate is today. If the Fed is viewing policy as being tight right now, you know, they are going to want to take steps to start moving from, you know, this 4.25, 4.5 type level, you know, back towards that 3% level. So, you know, a series of consecutive cuts, I think, makes more sense than to go 50 and 25, et cetera. And I think they can, you know, the data is still allowing them to take their time to, you know, move gradually until they get things back to what they think is a neutral level.
So what do you think, though, Scott? Like, say, assuming that, let's just say the next payroll report, you know, comes in a bit, you know, there, we don't see this, like, upward revision, in other words. It sort of stays as it is. Maybe it even comes, you know, a little bit weaker, and you round up, let's just say, to that 4.3 unemployment rates, because we came very close to that. If they go 50, do you think that we could have a repeat of what we had in September 2024, where that back end really starts to increase because of the unknown in regards to tariff and the impact of inflation going forward?
I think there's a lot of outcomes that point to a steepening curve, and many of them come about by, you know, the Fed reducing interest rates. So I do think if, you know, with the economic data, again, still, as you point out, Leslie, still holding up okay, inflation still, you know, slightly above target, I don't think there's reasons to kind of rush to overstimulate policy here. And so our base case remains they're going to keep doing 25. If they do decide to do 50, I think we should expect probably the bond market to rally and also for the curve to steepen. So I think that fives will go down more than 30, you know, the long in the 20s and the 30-year part of the curve.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. I think, we talked about that earlier, we're still positioned in the intermediate part as well. Now, as we talk about the Fed,
and it's also, a big dollar move too, right? If you set up these scenarios like that, right, you do wind up putting a lot more pressure on the currency.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's a great point. You know, I have to ask you, though, when we talk about things like the Fed, and, you know, as you and I are well aware, even though we have, as investors, you know, there's certain unknowns that are known now, but we still have, you know, a much more vocal president than we have in the past. And because of that, there's been sort of this, you know, cloud, if you will, of, you know, a media headline and chatter in regards to, you know, whether it's the Fed's autonomy, you know, whether, you know, with, you know, Moran being the, you know, short-term sort of fill-in for Krugler, or if it's, in fact, you know, the BLS. So when we think about this, and I want to ask you this too, Scott, because I know you're a tips player just like we are, but, you know, when you think about how this might impact going forward in terms of the new, you know, BLS head, in terms of, you know, the Fed going forward, just in terms of, you know, how the market views this as the Fed's autonomy, or even how the market views now this BLS data, which also not only impacts non-farm payroll, but as you know, impacts the CPI as well. So do you think that the market overlooks this, or do you think this will create more volatility over the next several months?
There's a lot of good stuff in there, Leslie. So, you know, I think in regards to the BLS, I mean, let's put things in perspective, right? I mean, the jobs revision, as you said, was 258,000, and that's on a base of, I think, 161 million, right, people. So it's a pretty good hit rate, right, still with the BLS, with the BLS, you know, stats and data. You know, I think time will tell, right, on the change at the BLS and what will it mean to the data. Right, we don't just get one series, right? We get a number of different series. We have real-time data sources now. So we have a lot, you know, a lot of other ways to triangulate and to get a sense of, you know, is the BLS data still correct? Is it still telling us the right signal? So I think for that one, it's going to be like wait and see, right? Wait and see if the new person gets approved, and then wait and see, like, are there any dramatic changes to the data, right? They did talk about releasing the data quarterly, the non-farm data quarterly as opposed to monthly. Right? Things like this, I think, are very bad, right? They're very bad for a country that needs to borrow a lot of money, and I think it's a very bad outcome for the currency, right, which has that reserve. Right, that reserve status. As far as the Fed independence, I mean, just going back to the basics, Leslie, which, you know, we all know is, you know, it takes an act of Congress to really change that Fed independence. And, you know, there's very, like, as of now, very low probability of that happening in our eyes. But I think it, you know, the president will have a chance to appoint a new Fed chair next year. I, you know, betting odds are that he appoints someone who's pretty dovish, because that's what, you know, that's the path that he thinks policy should be on. So, you know, I think there's a pretty high probability, again, like talking to our rate cut scenarios, that, you know, the economic data should support that, but also a new Fed chair who's going to lean a little bit more in favor of rate reductions is most likely going to have that seat in, what, 7 or 8 months now.
Yeah, we would agree with that. And I think the market agrees with that as well, given, and you know, you and I have been in this business such a long time that we know that fixed income market has a tendency to be forward looking. So they do price a lot of that expectation in. But I agree with you. I mean, you know, we think that the credibility of the Fed is sound, it's not just one person, and you know, while the BLS data might be flawed, whether it's due to cuts or, you know, response rates, it's not as though it's gonna be a quick overnight change. So And we still, like what I was saying with the tips market, tips have been one of the best asset classes this year. You know, we don't think that is necessarily going to change dramatically in terms of CPI or impact the tips market as much.
Yeah.
But I do want to,
please. The last point, I mean, if you look at all the, you know, the candidates that are being mentioned, right, at least the top candidates that are being mentioned for that Fed chair, I mean, they are all like well established, well respected economists. Right. So again, I think that should give people a lot of comfort that, you know, whoever's running the Fed, right, is probably going to be someone that has, you know, does have market credibility and does have, you know, does have a standing in the economic community.
Absolutely. And I do want to just talk about, just as we go think about this, you know, this year in terms of fixed income performance, I could tell you from our perspective how we came into the year. And I think, you know, Scott, in our previous podcast, you had agreed. I mean, we came into the year, spreads were a bit tight, particularly in what we call the lower quality, if you will, and what that I mean by, you know, high yield. And actually, right now, high yield spreads are only 4 basis points different than they were at the beginning of the year. So we went for the higher quality, right? So, you know, being overly defensive has really not been the winning strategy, right? Being overly defensive, you and I were talking before about people staying in that cash, has not necessarily been the best strategy this year. But how do you think about, you know, going forward in terms of your positioning and even those higher quality sectors that may not have, you know, performed as well as one might have thought, say like munis or whatever it might be. So how are you positioning now in terms of going forward, the fact that you and I both believe that growth will slow. I mean, you know, I think you will believe this as well, not to recessionary fashion, but we are going to have slower growth ahead. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think the, you know, very much agree. The trades for us right now, you know, I think duration does move lower from here. So we may have some volatility around Jackson Hole. We may have some volatility around the Fed noise, but we would view any backup in yields as a buying opportunity and think clients should have more duration in the portfolio and clients should be ready for those additional Fed rate reductions. The credit market's tough, right, Leslie? Because when you look at the fundamentals, as you said, they're incredibly solid. If you look at the company earnings, they still remain like fairly robust. You know, despite the tighter spreads, credit is still very well supported. Any backup in yields, any backup in spreads, we do see those buyers emerge, those buyers from both the U.S. market as well as, you know, offshore of the U.S. So the fundamentals and the technicals remain really strong. I think we have to remember, right, that we tell clients all the time the best predictor of return is yield. So while we can look at spreads and debate that, which we do all day long, right, yield is a very good indicator of what returns will be. And I think, as you point out, Leslie, the returns or the yields for the second half of the year, or at least the next, you know, 4 months, we think are going to be pretty good in those intermediate duration range assets, whether it be treasuries, whether it be mortgage-backed securities, whether it be, you know, parts of the investment grade credit market. And like you said, Leslie, the muni market has been the one real laggard in this whole fixed income rally the first 7 months. So if you look at all the stresses that happened to the muni market, whether it be around what was going to be in the fiscal package, the funding from the federal government to states, the amount of issuance that occurred ahead of these events, I mean, the muni market has faced a tremendous amount of headwinds. And a lot of those, you know, a lot of that wind is dying down now. A lot of those, you know, sales are pointing in the other direction. And the muni market is setting up for us to be a really strong performer in the second half of the year.
You know, yeah, Scott, we absolutely agree with that. I mean, you know, the muni market, you know, has surprisingly, I mean, to a point understandable with the amount of the front load and supply, but now that they've, you know, sort of removed the, you know, risk of losing tax exemption status, we anticipate that the muni market, particularly when you look at relative value, should come back in the second half of the year as well. And we're also long agency MBS, but I have to ask you, but I want to ask you two things when we think about final thoughts. Let's start with sort of like the pessimistic wall of worry, because I haven't agreed with everything you said about the credit market, but we're always asked, is the market too complacent? Are financial conditions too loose? So let's, you know, start with sort of the one thing that makes you a little bit concerned. But on the second, with the final thoughts, I really want you to just talk about where you see like the greatest opportunity, either here or abroad or any type of asset class, because I know our listeners would be, you know, very interested in terms of how Allianz is sort of positioned right now.
I think the bigger, you know, as you touched upon, what the biggest worry is that the market has a lot of cuts priced in for the Fed right now, right? We still think that the Fed can over-deliver a bit what's priced in, you know, but nonetheless, as you start to, the probability of a 50 and the probability of, you know, more cuts starts to increase, you do wind up with disappointment. And if you look at the stock market, and I know, which we all do every day, right, it's pretty close to all-time highs. So, you know, this is really not the typical environment where the Fed is going to cut 50 or the Fed needs to do something, right, a bit more aggressive. So I think the one worry is that with risk markets doing so well, is the Fed going to get cold feet at some point and the Fed not going to deliver that stimulus, right, that the market is expecting? That's something that, you know, if you will, we're debating and kind of keeps me up at night, right? These high probability priced events that
sure.
we think are going
yeah.
to happen, right? The other side of it.
Sure.
So as far as like where are the opportunities? Like I think for like for the U.S. investor, right? The muni market we just said is cheap, right? I think outside of the U.S., there's still a tremendous opportunity in interest rate markets where central banks, where countries who have been more punished by the tariffs, we see growth slowing, we see inflation moving lower and moving to target. Right? That's where I think people can also think about owning duration. There's many places in emerging markets where real rates remain super high. Again, weaker dollar, stronger EM currencies tend to be a good backdrop, you know, for those markets. So think, you know, places in Latin America, places in Asia, where we think we can get a lot of rally in emerging markets. Emerging markets has been an underloved asset class for 4 years now. And I think we've really started to see, you're going to start to see some more money move back into that asset class as the Fed cuts rates. We get a little bit of a weaker dollar environment.
Well, yeah, I agree with you on that as well, Scott. I definitely do. I mean, and we know in times like this, it's really need to not dig deep, but the relative value out there in fixed income, the opportunity set, and I think in order for you to really start to widen it, you need to look out to your point into things like EM, because right now it's not that we think that we're going to have this catalyst of widening spreads, but you know we have where we are in a situation where, you know, the relative value is, you know, spreads are a bit tight. Carry is wonderful, and I completely agree with you. Compounding income is a tailwind to total return. And I think that will continue, and that's which is why we, you know, are sort of guiding our investors to get out of that cash, you know, position, particularly to your point as the Fed cuts and that and those short ends start to move lower. But, you know, we really appreciate you coming on, Scott. I always enjoy talking to you, and I definitely look forward to having you on again, because I think that we're going to have a lot of sentiment changes, forward pricing changes from now to the end of the year. So I definitely want to, you know, sort of, you know, pick your brain come, you know, November, December, and just to see where we stand heading into 2026. So thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, Leslie. Thank you. Thank you for the time. Look forward to it, and good luck to you and the team.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.